It's McCowan. It's Shannon. We welcome you to the program.
Happy Monday, Robert.
And the same to you, John. I hope you had a swell weekend. Mackenzie Hughes, I wonder if he played golf on the weekend. He might not have.
I think he, you know what? I guarantee you, Mackenzie Hughes did one thing all weekend.
Well, look after the baby?
And sleep.
And sleep,
yeah. And, and sleep. When you think, you know, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, he spent so much time in the United Kingdom, you know, at Royal St. George's. And
flew from there to Tokyo.
Then to Tokyo, and now he's back in North America.
Oh, I know.
And having done that, I did the Toronto-Tokyo trip too many times over a very short period of time. It is absolutely exhausting. I think people say, I can do 12 hours. I can do 13 hours. It's not a problem. And then the time change. Oh, my goodness. It is exhausting, Bob. You have no idea by the time you get home where you are, who you are, what you are.
Well, Mackenzie Hughes, who represented Canada along with Corey Connors in the Olympics, in the golf event, and is one of the most prominent Canadians on the PGA Tour, joins us today on the program. And we'll find out what that experience in Tokyo actually was like. And is he enthusiastic about the possibility of doing it again? Mackenzie Hughes, when we come back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, and we welcome you aboard. And joining us today, just freshly back from Tokyo and his first experience at the Olympic Games, Mackenzie Hughes is with us from Charlotte. Well, that was, I would imagine, you're not happy with the way you played. I'm quite sure of that. But I would think that the whole experience was almost otherworldly, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was sort of a surreal experience to be a part of an event like that, where it feels like it's a lot bigger than just one individual sport or athlete. And there's just a completely different feel to that event than any other I've played in. So it was very special to be a part of. And I'm itching to get back already for Paris.
First of all, do you know what time zone you're in? Because you between playing in the UK and now playing in Japan, you've been bouncing around a few time zones.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where I'm at right now, but my feet are on the ground here, so that's important. But yeah, it's been a little bit tough getting used to the time, and I think that was an adjustment playing the last few weeks. I've not done that very often, where I bounced around that many different time zones so drastically. It's one thing if it's a few hours, but Japan was 13 hours ahead. So
yeah.
Pretty shocking to the body, but stuff you got to do to compete at the highest level.
So obviously Tokyo was your first appearance at an Olympic Games as a participant. Did you go to Vancouver by any chance?
No, I've really had no personal experience with the games. So yeah, that was really my maiden voyage, competing or witnessing it with my eyes. So I know it was a lot different than past games, given everything going on in the world. So
yeah,
I'm very much looking forward to getting to the next games, where you might be able to go see a few of the events and taking a bit more of that experience.
That's Paris, France. Not a bad place, Paris, France.
Not bad. I like bread too. So I'd fit right in.
Were you slated to go last year?
So when the team would have been picked, I was not on the team. So I benefited from the extra year that we were given to qualify. Now, we didn't play the 3 months leading up to the selection process there. So, I mean, again, I'd like to have said that maybe I could have played my way on the team, but as it was last June, I was not on the team. So, like I said, I benefited from that, and felt fortunate to be on the team this time around.
What was the criteria for the selection process? Was it FedEx Cup points? What was it?
It was world ranking. So they just went off the world ranking and they took the two highest ranked Canadian players. So pretty black and white. You kind of knew where you were at the whole time. And yeah, not much of a secret who was going to qualify kind of, you know, when it got down to the end, it was kind of, you knew you had a pretty, I knew I had a pretty good chance, you know, with probably 2 months or so to go. But you never know. I mean, someone can get hot and fly past you. So sure. You just kind of got to take care of what you can.
I know that as a professional athlete, this the Olympic world is a little different, but every pro athlete I've talked to about the going to the Olympics, the only thing they talk about all the time is the village. Was that the case for you as well?
So we actually, given where the golf course was located, we didn't stay in the village. So we stayed a little closer to the golf course. The village was an hour and a half one way to the golf course. So 3 hours driving each day. So we opted for something a bit closer. Now we still had a long drive ourselves, but we were a little bit closer. But I did go down to the village one day and I thought it was really neat and kind of made me want to have that experience next time potentially. So I think that, you know, if Paris, you know, if I'm lucky to be part of that next team, I think I'd try to stay down there at the village for at least a night or two to take that in and experience what that's like.
We understand that given the COVID situation, no fans are allowed into most of the venues for the Olympics. Outside of Tokyo, I guess there are some that are allowed in, but certainly in Tokyo, not. You had some fans at the golf course. But were you allowed to go to any other events? And did you take advantage of that?
No. So that was kind of what I was alluding to before, is that we unfortunately weren't able to really do anything. We couldn't go see other events, couldn't leave the hotel. So we were really, you know, strapped as to what we could do over right there. And it made for not long days, but just you know, very repetitive days as far as like, you know, get up, van ride the course, practice, play, and then we'd come home. So that was pretty much all we did. And, you know, thankfully we had a great group of people over there and, you know, that's my son.
Yeah, saying hello.
Yeah. Saying hello. We had a great group over there. We had a lot of fun, but no, I would have loved to have seen some of the other events and be able to watch some of the other athletes.
How would you define your relation? Sorry, John. How would you define your relationship with Corey? You're both Canadians, but you weren't teammates essentially on this. You were a couple of individuals striving for the same objective. Are you guys pals?
Yeah, we're great pals. We've known each other for a long time. He was in my wedding and vice versa. We've known each other for 10, 15 years at least. So and we've competed alongside each other the whole time. I mean, whether it was junior golf or amateur golf, we both went to Kent State University. So I spent 2 years with Corey there. He was 2 years behind me. So we've really done things together the whole way along. And I've gotten to know him really well. And yeah, so it was kind of cool. And I thought that it would have been neat if there was some sort of team aspect to the competition. I think it would add a nice little dynamic to it. Some different, you know, side stories where, you know, you might have a teammate that's, you know, not in contention for a medal. One guy is, but then, you know, as far as the team goes, you know, that guy that's not in the medal running himself individually might play a round, you know, the round of his life to help the team earn a medal. So I think the next time around, I'd love to see him be a bit more creative with, you know, a couple of different formats and, you know, just make it a bit more interesting, I think.
How did this golf course compare to the courses you play on the tour?
I'd say very similar. I mean, we play courses like that. You know, one that came to mind was probably like a Colonial Country Club type thing. Just very traditional tree lined golf course. And, Was kind of right there in front of you, nothing really tricked up about it. And but was definitely like a tour caliber golf course. Was in phenomenal shape. I mean, we are kind of spoiled, but they had not had a round of golf there in 3 months leading up to the competition. So, I mean, you can imagine, like, there was like not a divot in the fairway. The greens were perfect. So, yeah, we were treated to a nice golf course last week, and certainly one that was a good test.
You didn't play well. I have to be blunt. I would think you would concur that you're not, you weren't happy with the way you played.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, you had the lead in the U.S. Open. You finished top 10 at the Open Championship. The prognosis, the direction of your game seemed to be going in the right direction. What do you think happened?
Yeah, I think that, you know, anyone that's played this game knows that on any week, any given day, you just, even at the highest level, you don't know what you're going to get.
Of course.
And I think that's the beauty of this game is that, you know, you walk into some tournaments and, you know, the prohibitive betting favorites, you know, might miss the cut. You know, like you look at, you know, some of these tournaments where, like, you know, Dustin Johnson comes in, he's the odds on betting favorite, and he misses the cut. And you can't predict that, you know, you don't know when that's coming. And I think that's the kind of what I'm going with, you know, for the Olympics is just that, like, golf happened and, I didn't bring my best stuff and, you know, you're playing in a different environment and yeah, I didn't perform the way I want to. So I would have loved for it to have gone better. I would have loved to have medaled, but nothing I can do about now. And, I'm just looking forward to getting myself back there so I can get a little redemption.
So now that you're back in North America, what's your routine? When do you get back on the course? So when do you get set for the play, your own playoffs?
Yeah, so I'm starting back next week. I'm playing in the Wyndham Championship. So that's actually just down the road for me in Greensboro, North Carolina. And then I have that last tournament and then playoffs start. So I'm gearing up for that. Looking forward to getting back, you know, a normal time clock and back on the PGA Tour here soon. So, but yeah, looking forward to a good run in the playoffs. I had a nice run last year in the playoffs. So hopefully I can do something similar this year.
Mackenzie Hughes is with us. We'll take a quick break and come back with more after these messages. It's Bob McCallum. It's John Shannon and Mackenzie Hughes, freshly back from the Olympic Games in Tokyo and getting ready to go back on the PGA Tour and get ready for the FedEx Cup. I'd mentioned earlier, Mac, that your performance in the U.S. Open, where you had the lead, I think, after 54 holes,
and
finished 15th, and then a really good performance at the Open in Britain leading up to this. How do you analyze your performances in those two big events within the big picture of your entire career? I know it's a learning curve.
Yeah.
But how much of that becomes a mental thing and how much of that is a physical thing, do you think?
You know, I think it's a very large percentage of that is mental. If you'd ask me to kind of rate those performances and those experiences in the scheme of my career, I'd say I look at those only as positives. So if I start at the U.S. Open, leading after three rounds, going into the last round of a major in the last group, I mean, I had never contended in a major championship before. So to put myself in that position, I knew it was only going to be a positive regardless of how it turned out. Now, I believed I could win and I expected myself, you know, to be there at the end. So it was disappointing not to win that tournament, but I think that's part of, you know, I want to say earning your stripes, I guess, but, you know, guys have to put themselves there sometimes a few times before they, you know, cross that line. And the example I use and, I talked to Mike Weir about this. I mean, he played in the final group at the PGA with Tiger in 99.
Yeah, shot 80, I think.
Yeah, and then 4 years later, you know, was able to put on that green jacket. So I'd like to think I could follow a progression like that where, you know, you get yourself in the mix, you know, you get to know what it feels like, you get to know what your body feels like. And then, you know, you just try and be better the next time you're there. But it doesn't, you know, I don't leave there with scar tissue or anything like that. I feel like it was a positive experience and I'm going to be better for it. And then the Open Championship, I think I felt a bit more comfortable. And again, I think just having that experience from Torrey Pines just made me feel like I belong a bit more. And not that I didn't feel like I belonged before. It's just that sometimes having that validation and a great result, you know, just helps you solidify that belief a bit more. So I think as far as the progression goes and myself and the major championships, I'm excited to where that's kind of gone the last couple of months. And, you know, I know we have a while before our next major, but I think when the majors start up again next year, I'm going to be a lot more prepared to go into those and ready to potentially win one of those.
So are you convinced that your time at Torrey Pines helped you at Royal St. George's?
Oh, for sure. I think that, like I said, the nerves and the feelings I had at Torrey Pines, again, just prepared me to know what I was going to feel, you know, going into the weekend. I was only, I think four or five back going into the weekend. And then on Saturday I played with Brooks Koepka, you know, who, draws a big crowd and, you know, is one of the top players in the game. So, I handled myself well on Saturday. Again, kind of knowing what to expect, what to feel. And then on Sunday, I didn't play great on Sunday, but I think just with that experience from Torrey Pines, I kind of was able to slow myself down and, allow myself to still have a nice finish, even though I didn't have a chance to win really come down the last nine holes. Just nice to be in there, kind of within a shouting distance of the lead. And you never know what happens on the back nine. And sometimes you go lights out, sometimes you don't. But yeah, all those experiences I've had, and especially Torrey Pines, have kind of helped me recently. Just a little bit of confidence and a little bit of extra belief.
You know, I was one of those guys. I subscribed to the Open app and watched every shot of yours on the weekend because we're not going to see you on the leaderboard, or we're not going to see you on American television. That's for sure. Very much. But how much different is playing in the UK than playing over here?
It's very, very different. And I hate to say I mean, to me, it's better. It's a better form of golf. It requires you to think a lot more, use the ground, use the slopes, hit different shots, be creative. I think that's something that lacks a bit sometimes when we see stateside golf in North America. It's just a lot of target golf. Generally, conditions are quite soft. You know, where the ball hits, it generally stops. And it takes a lot of the thinking and strategy out of golf. And I loved being over there because, you know, you could be 140 yards and, you know, the wind could be blowing 20 miles an hour in your face. And it could be a number of different shots that you could hit around the greens. You can putt, you can use hybrids, you can chip, you can flop it if you want, but there's just, you have options. Whereas if you're say greenside in the rough, playing in North America, the rough's probably pretty thick. You're probably grabbing your most lofted wedge and you're just kind of hacking it out. So I think that, it's awesome. I love what it requires. And, I hope I get to play a lot more of it, coming up.
Mind you, the weather didn't challenge you very much over there, did it?
No,
it was almost too nice.
The weather was perfect. I will say that we got very fortunate, and for that being my first Open Championship, I would say I was very spoiled with the weather, and I'm sure I'll never play an Open Championship with better weather again in my life. So I got that one out of the way, and I'll be bracing for impact next year at St. Andrews.
Well, the golf course was in pretty good shape too, because they had pretty good weather leading up to it. I'm sure you've watched Open Championships where not only is the weather bad, but the course is in really rough shape.
Yeah. Well, I know that in 2003, when they had the Open there at St. George's, Ben Curtis won, who is another Kent State alum, but the golf course was so dry and so fiery. They had almost no rough, but the golf course was so dry that I wouldn't say it was unplayable, but at certain points it became, I mean, you saw some of those fairways at St. George's that were like, literal, just like, it was like a crown in the middle of the fairway.
Oh yeah.
Go right in the fairway, go right, left of the fairway, go left. And it was so firm that it probably didn't play the way it was really meant to be played. And so I think that we got a bit fortunate that it was playing a little bit softer this past week, or a couple weeks ago at St. George's. So the golf course played awesome, but you're right. They had tremendous weather leading up to it and during the week of, so made for a really enjoyable experience.
Most people that are watching this, I assume, play golf or have played golf, and most of them probably understand.
Or think they play golf, Bob.
Well, that would be like you. And understand the nerves that can hit you on the first tee if somebody's watching, if you're playing in the club championship, if you're playing a match, or if you've had the opportunity to play in any kind of a tournament, a real tournament. And we assume that when guys like you get used to playing on the PGA Tour at the highest level, those nerves, I mean, you get a little tense on the first tee, but it doesn't really impact your performance. But if you're on the first tee at the United States Open with a lead in the final day, what was going on inside of you? Was it extraordinarily different than anything you've ever felt before?
No, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel, extraordinary nerves. Now, I'm someone that I always feel something on the first tee. So what I was feeling was just a heightened version of that, basically. I felt like a bigger stage. It felt different than most first tee shots. I think that it's one of those things where you kind of have to embrace, you embrace what that feels like. You embrace those nerves because, if you look at it as a negative, it's going to make your life pretty hard because, I've always looked at it like feeling those nerves is a privilege. You've worked hard to put yourself in a position like that where you feel those nerves. If I was teeing off Sunday at Torrey Pines in the first group off and I was in dead last on Sunday, I wouldn't have felt many nerves.
Of course.
But I worked hard, played well, put myself in position to feel those nerves. So I look at it as a positive and, something I was looking forward to, but there's no doubt. I mean, I felt nervous and I felt a bit different, but you do the same things. You take a deep breath, you remind yourself that, you're playing great and this is where you're supposed to be. And you try to hit the fairway and off you go.
So did those nerves last one shot? And then essentially it dissipates, or does it recur during the swing for you or during the round for you?
I would say that those nerves were there, a large portion of the round. But like you said, I mean, the first tee nerves, I think, were the most, obviously. But I think that, as you alluded to earlier, I mean, I can still play at a high level feeling nerves. I mean, it's almost more like a adrenaline rush more than anything else. So your body's, charged up and full of energy, but, we've dealt with that our whole lives. I mean, as a as a professional golfer, I mean, I've felt those things before, so I know how to handle them, how to deal with them. So I would say I felt them for a large portion of the round, but I know how to play that way, and I know how to manage those feelings.
How important is it? And I guess I asked the question based on Torrey Pines and Royal St. George's. How important is the first hole period? You know, par, birdie, bogey.
You know what? I don't put too much stock in it, but I mean, it is nice to get off to a good start. I mean, if I had birdied that first hole at Torrey Pines, probably would have settled me down pretty nicely. I made bogey, so probably had a bit of the reverse effect where, you know, your mind kind of wanders when you do something like that. When I actually hit two great shots into that first hole, so I tried to remind myself of that. But yeah, you know, you can't put too much stock on it because, you know, whether you bogey the first hole or the last hole, they really don't matter in the grand scheme of things, you know, where it comes. But yeah, it is nice though to get off to a calm start where maybe you hit the fairway, hit the green, you two putt, sort of stress free. But you know, I do feel like I play the first hole generally pretty well. I get off to pretty good starts, but yeah, it's not too important when it boils down to it, I'd say.
Hey, so after a tournament on the Monday, you don't have to worry about qualifying for the next week. You got some time. Do you, in addition to practice, how much video of your tournament play do you watch?
Well, as you allude to, I'm generally not on TV as much as I'd like to be. So I don't often get a chance to watch that video. I'd say, you know, when I've played well recently, like the US Open, there was lots of video that I could watch and kind of draw from. So that was fun to be able to do that and potentially learn a thing or two there, which I did. But yeah, and not only that, but it's nice to sometimes have some of those little shots saved as sort of reminders as to what you've done or, you know, highlights, this and that. So it is nice to look back on those things and learn a little bit. But like I said, it's not generally an option for me to do that, to go back and look at all the shots I've hit from the past week. You know, like Tiger Woods would have every shot that right. He wanted to watch at his disposal. So don't get that all the time, but when I do, I try and take advantage and yeah, try and learn at least one thing I did wrong or did right.
So the only really thing you have to do is explain to your mom that, you know, mom, you're not in charge of the television and you don't know when you're going to be on. So you just have to relax and watch the leaderboard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thankfully they've got, you know, the apps and whatnot have gotten a bit better and they've, you know, got shot tracking and, you know, at least gives you a pretty good idea of what I'm doing out there. But yeah, my family has been on edge a few times, not being able to see me, but knowing that I'm right there near the lead, but not knowing what I'm doing because they're not showing me. So hopefully I can keep getting my name out there and they'll start showing me a bit more.
Well, let's hope the Olympics performance was an aberration. The trending has been very positive the last couple of months for you. And I'm sure you're looking forward to the FedEx Cup and the opportunities that presents. And you're in a better position with your game and maybe your attitude than you've probably ever been coming to this point in the season. We thank you very much for taking some time for us. And we wish you good luck the rest of the way and carrying forward. And hopefully we'll have an opportunity to chat somewhere down the road. Thanks a lot, yeah. Mackenzie.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Mackenzie Hughes, we'll be back after these messages. McCowan, Shannon, back with you. And again, our thanks to Mackenzie Hughes for joining us. Delightful young man.
Yeah.
And great personality. And obviously a talented player. And it'll be really interesting for me, at least, and I think for all golf fans, over the next while to see whether this recent elevation in his game, and when I say that, I mean specifically his performance at the US Open, where he was leading after three rounds, and then coming back and finishing in the top 10, I think tied for sixth mm-hmm. in the Open Championship, whether that impacts his game going forward, because so much of this is building blocks for 99% of the guys. Like, there's guys like Tiger go out there and, you know, hi, how are you? And they go out and win. There aren't many of those. A DJ is a perfect example of a guy who took a long time to put the building blocks in place. And most guys are like that. And now McKenzie's had a couple of eventful events that maybe he can build on. We will find out.
Yeah, the interesting thing is in listening to him speak, you know, he and Bob, you know this very well. These guys aren't just a golfer. They're almost like the CEO of a conglomerate. You know, they have their swing coach, they have their team, their psychologist. Oh, yeah. And you can see how he has built up how to manage expectations, and that when he does have a bad day, he can learn from it. And so he hasn't done that by himself. The people around him are doing an excellent job of building him up and making sure that he can learn from his mistakes and even learn from a disappointment at the Olympics as he prepares to get back on the tour this week.
Speaking of the Olympics, we're going to spend some time tomorrow talking about these games. Our very, very good friend, Mary Ormsby of the Toronto Star, will join us to chat about it. And I think among the things we'll talk about is the extraordinary success of the women's team. And I hate even using that phrase, because women's team and men's team are not two separate entities.
Or the women on the team.
Fine. That's a much better way of saying it. Mm-hmm. But there's some truth in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm intrigued by her perspective of whether that is just a cyclical thing that might not have any relevance, or does it? Is there something about the Canadian system that allows this to happen, or even promotes this to happen? Are the best athletes, male athletes in this country, automatically drawn to team sports and therefore not even available for individual activities like Olympic Games sports? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but we'll get her perspective on it. We'll do that tomorrow. Until then, you have a nice night, John.
Thank you, Robert.
Sleep tight.
I won't sleep as well as Mackenzie Hughes will, though, I'll tell you that.
We'll catch you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.